Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, as one would imagine, NBA Twitter is taking last night's win really, really well.
Looking funny in the light.
Like a Las Vegas stripper. One of the things that I think you and I have talked quite a bit about over the years now doing this and covering this Lakers team has been the process that has gone into them building this team. And I think that was a conversation that once again came up today. And I think, like, I didn't try to participate in too much of it on Twitter just because I just don't feel like it. But I see that, like, my issue with the analysis heading into the series was that I felt that people were overthinking it, right? That's literally the title of yesterday's show, is that Anthony Davis reminded everybody, hey, let's not overthink this final series, right?
Yeah.
And, like, that I think is different from the valid criticisms of the way that the Lakers arrived at this team and this version of the organization, right? They signed LeBron James, and the idea when they signed him was that he was going to invest himself in the young core. He was going to invest himself in Luke Walton. He was going to invest himself and work as a partner with Magic Johnson. Well, three out of those three parties are no longer with the organization. The young core is no more. It is basically Kyle Kuzma now. We can't even say that Alex Caruso was a part of the young core because he was playing behind Tyler Ennis. Luke Walton is obviously in Sacramento, and the Lakers are better off for it. And Magic Johnson is back to tweeting about the NBA. And I think at the time, anybody who was confident in the Lakers coming off of missing the playoffs with LeBron James that first year, and then losing Magic Johnson for, you know, with no prior acknowledgement of what that would mean, you know, no conversation between him and anybody with what that would mean and the situation that would put the Lakers in. Of course, there were people concerned about it. And then, you know, there were the rumors right after Magic left that there were some pretty high-level candidates that were potentially interested in the Lakers gig, right? And, of course, people would have been more confident with Bob Myers at the helm, or if they could have brought Masai Ujiri over here some way, somehow, right? Of course, people would have been more confident in it. That isn't how it played out. And they go into an offseason where they think that they have a good shot at Kawhi Leonard, and they wait for Kawhi Leonard, and that winds up costing them some of the free agent candidates that they might have been interested in otherwise. But they still pretty apparently had a plan, and I think, like, somewhere along the way between Magic's departure and their decision to keep Rob Pelinka, and then eventually in that offseason, there seemed to be an organizational understanding of, okay, yeah, we actually got to clean some stuff up here. Like, we have some work cut out for us. We can't just rely on the exceptionalism that landed us LeBron James in the first place. And that shift is very important to note, I think. And I think it's something that people aren't quite taking into account today when they're saying, well, the Lakers just lucked into this entire situation. They lucked into parts of it, but I think at some point there was a cognitive shift in the way that they approached the work that it takes to be this kind of successful in the NBA.
My impression, and this is something that has grown since being a part of the organization, is that people generally don't understand how multifaceted the Lakers organization is. We're not just operating on the levels of net rating and contract, you know, salary cap manipulations and draft asset acquisition, mm-hmm. right? These are mentalities that are really, for several years now, analytics as well, which is not to say that we don't use analytics, right? It's just there's a mentality that's been attached to, and a significant portion of NBA coverage is done by people that really exalt those things, mm-hmm. right? And so when you
especially
exalt
on Twitter,
yes, when you exalt those things and you think that they are what it means to become a champion, to build a championship organization, our blind spots are exactly that for a reason. We are not aware that something is there,
right?
So we don't account for it, mm-hmm. right? And I think that that portion of NBA coverage has more blind spots or broader blind spots than most to a lot of what goes into it. So they can talk themselves into this notion that market and weather are what get, you know, an aspiring billionaire and international superstar to decide to spend the next 3+ years of his career somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that another superstar, you know, we end up trading for them. Like, well, why do they want to be here in the first place? That's the ultimate question. And if you're able to talk yourself into the notion that it's because of weather and market size, you're just not seeing the whole picture or even very much of it at all. You were looking at it through your lens, right? Mm-hmm. Through your lens of why you resent the Los Angeles Lakers is because, oh, they don't have to try hard. They do everything wrong. And they're just born under a lucky star because of these factors out of their control. They don't deserve it. That's the underlying mm-hmm. notion, is that we don't deserve to. And there was a piece in The Athletic today that was like, this is why you should be rooting for the Miami Heat. And a big part of the argument was
the same people who write that article, who, by the way, John Hollinger is a colleague of mine here on this network. He has a show with Nate Duncan. Nothing personal against him. I still respect a lot of the work that he's done, but I thought that article was bullshit. Like I just thought that was not
making it a moral imperative.
Like, why Lakers fans have this us against the world mentality. You're telling the world to root against us.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, there's an unwillingness to acknowledge our own limitations that can be very frustrating, right? Like, oh, it is not me who made a mistake in judgment. And like the thing that kills me is the whole like, well, yeah, you guys have LeBron and AD. Of course you're like this. It's like, well, why didn't you pick us then?
Where was that like, a second ago?
Where was that all year?
Yeah.
And what it is that what all of this reveals is that the underlying principle is to be anti-Lakers, is to root against the Lakers. And that's not to say that I expect everyone to celebrate the Lakers. Kevin O'Connor's coverage.
I don't care if you're anti-Lakers. There's plenty of reason to be. They've ruined a lot of childhoods. Just admit it. Just admit it while you're doing so.
So that's part of it, right, is this silly notion of being unbiased, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. But even if you don't like the Lakers, like, so for example, I hate the Celtics.
Yeah.
Right? I can appreciate what the Celtics are as a team. And how strong they were on the wing, just purely from a basketball standpoint. This is what I'm saying, is that if you cover the NBA, you have to have some sort of basketball principle to you, in that no matter how you feel about that team or that player, things like that, can you be like, well, I've got enough respect for the sport that, like, I hate that guy, but he was freaking awesome tonight.
Yeah.
You know? Like, can you do that? And can you appreciate the ways in which he was awesome, even though you were rooting against him?
Well, and if you can't do that, acknowledge why it is that you can't do that. Like today, one of my favorite things to do when the Lakers are playing well is listen to Bill Simmons cry about it on his various pods. And he did the show with Ryan Russillo, and shouts to Russillo for telling his boss, like, dude, you sound stupid right now. But I listened to it, and the thing that I can grant Simmons is that, like, he has never even kind of pretended to be objective in this conversation. Like, mm-hmm. it's what drives me insane about Bob Ryan. Like, he's this guy, he's held up as the greatest beat reporter of all time. Jackie McMullen, too. these people who are held up on bastions of journalism and integrity and all these stuff. It's like, it's kind of odd that Bob Ryan would think, I've heard him say straight up, he would rather have Bill Walton in a big game than Shaquille O'Neal. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Sure thing, Bob.
Just judge people on what they say, you know, and what they do.
And the other thing too that I noticed goes kind of unmentioned here, when you're talking about weather and market and a guy leaving decent situations for taking a step back potentially to go to a different situation he might have been able to carve out and create a little bit better for himself. Jimmy Butler did the exact same thing. He went to Miami where they were in the rebuilding process. They do have really nice weather. They do attract free agents because of those things. Not a peep about that, though.
No.
Weird. Really, really weird that goes unmentioned as the Lakers are beating them.
It's a very emperor has no clothes type of situation where, like, it's being more and more exposed that the arguments that are said to be made in good faith are not made in good faith. It is not the substance of it. It's the preferred outcome that they're made is being anti-Lakers. And that means that it means like, oh, you guys are too dumb to know the salary cap or like,
I had that same concern about Rob Pelinka, by the way. Like there were some reports coming out from people who report on the Lakers that there was concern about that as well. And again, because we knew nothing about the guy.
Oh, sure.
Was a concern.
You know, the one thing we did know about him that we should have put way more weight on, what do you think it is?
Well, I mean, it's his work ethic. It's that like Kobe respected him.
Kobe's agent.
Yeah.
Right? Like, think about Kobe just from and it's not just like, oh, Kobe, right? Like, whatever Kobe says or does is great, right? It's not that. It's that, think of how obsessive Kobe was, mm-hmm. right? And how detail-oriented he was. For a guy like that to give over that much of his career, the trust of it, and be like, I want that guy to take care of mm-hmm. my affairs while I'm busy being the best basketball player that I can be. Mm-hmm. What did Rob Pelinka have to show to a guy like Kobe for a guy like Kobe to be like, oh, that's my guy. Yeah, and then when the Lakers are looking to fill positions in the front office, Kobe advocates for him, mm-hmm. vouches for him. Exactly. So what does that say? Like if you're getting a letter of recommendation on this person has their act together in the substance of their work, not in their reputation, not in their ability to market and brand themselves and you know, put on a whole show, in the actual substance of who they are, there's no better letter of recommendation than what you get from Kobe Bryant. And that was the one thing that we really dropped the ball on in pursuit of somebody who had established themselves in a track record. There was already somebody there who people who would know knew that person had the goods.
I think you said something that it's really important on top of the actual point that you were making, but just acknowledging that, like, there was some stuff that we had blind spots for that we were wrong on, right? And I just wish, like, I feel like Twitter would be, well, the world, frankly, would be exponentially better if people could just acknowledge, man, I was wrong. I overthought this one. And I'm not saying, like I think there were reasons to believe that, like, once again, the math of this series, the math of
basketball. It's not about being wrong, right? Yeah.
It's like doubling down and tripling down and then insulting anybody who calls you out on being wrong in the first place. Like, to be completely honest, I think listeners of the show and people who have enjoyed my content have done so in large part because I will say, like, yeah, I was wrong about playoff Rondo. That's a thing that still exists, mm-hmm. you know? And just being able to do that instead of, well, of course Rondo is better because this, no. Nope, you don't get to say, well, of course, on this one. You were just wrong. I was just wrong.
And that's okay. So was I. Yeah. You know?
Like, yeah. let's take a quick second here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about last night's game or a couple nights ago's game in particular. Look ahead to game two here. We are also going to, on the third, in the third segment of this, I'm going to talk to Jen about Goran Dragic's knee and Bam Adebayo's shoulder. Both of those guys are apparently, are reportedly listed as doubtful for game two. So with that in mind as well, we'll discuss what we think about the upcoming game. Today's show is brought to you in part by Built Go. Head on over to builtgo.com, use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 30% off your next order. Again, that's LOCKED for 30% off at builtgo.com. They are the same people who put together Built Bars. It's the best. Built Bars are the best protein bars on the market. Built Go is the best way to just kind of break through that wall that we all go through on a day-to-day basis. For me, I have to be able to stay awake late into the night with these, like the Dodgers tonight are starting at 9 o'clock, or started tonight at 9 o'clock out here. And, you know, I'm raising a daughter. I'm with her all day. Lately, she's just decided that naps aren't her deal anymore. And it's just nice to be able to just pop in a little bit of Built Go into the drink. They're easy to take in 1.5 ounce packages. You put it in your briefcase, your golf bag. For me, they sit here on my desk. It's the best workout gel on the market. It's the best it's 5 hour energy without the same crash feeling. Plus it's natural, so it's also good for the body. They have 3 flavors, peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, chocolate mint. And it's just a great way to get that little bit of energy that you need to get over and get through the day. So builtgo.com is where you're going to go. Use promo code LOCKED. And again, you'll save 30% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 30% off at builtgo.com. Let's go. So now getting back to basketball and off the reaction to basketball, we are in the middle of the NBA Finals, and I'm going to try as hard as I possibly can. It might be impossible to just enjoy it and try to ignore the to try to ignore the noise that Twitter can sometimes produce, always produces, frankly. But I want to start with last night's game or a couple nights ago's game and ask, as I watched some of it again, and especially that run that the Lakers went on, to see if there was anything that, you know, was unsustainable, like the shooting, for example. At one point, they missed 13 straight three-pointers and still finished the night shooting 39.5% from three-point range. I don't think that's something that we can probably really rely on as without the context of the way that the game won. I don't think that's something that is going to be particularly repeatable really ever again, to be completely honest. But the question that needs to be asked here is, well, how close to 39.5% do they have to come to beat the Miami Heat? And I guess my question to you is, did you see enough open looks? Did they produce enough open looks that would make you think that they can, if they can't repeat whatever it was, I mean, it felt like they shot about 80% in that first quarter once they got going. If that isn't necessarily repeatable, what version of that can you hope to see moving forward?
So I think that we can expect a repeat of the shot quality. Mm-hmm. And the type of shot quality was high. And I think if the Lakers had that shot quality 100 times, they would shoot around what they shot last night. Like, I didn't think, now there were some makes early on, right, that were like, oh, that's a, you know, contested three that he just knocked down. Those were also balanced out by a 4-for-21 second half where we just biffed wide open threes as well.
And Green still shot like 3 of 8.
Sure. Right. But as a team, you know, we didn't shoot particularly well. So all in all, the types of shots that we got, I thought were better than average three-point looks. And so if we're a 35% three-point shooting team on a normal night, if you gave us those shots 100 times, I think we shoot 39% again, right? So That said, we know that the Lakers can be streaky from behind the line, and we could get those same shot quality and make 10 out of 38 instead of 15 out of 38. And that's totally possible. But in terms of shot quality, I do think it's sustainable.
Did you see anything that Miami could do to, you know, not allow that shot quality?
No, because it's based off of us being bigger than them. Mm. We have those shots open because, like, LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Dwight, and this is with Bam Adebayo in the lineup, right? They're all stronger than Bam is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, like, their only strong dude. And, you know, you got Jay Crowder, but in terms of, like, that's a big, big dude. We've got the three strongest players in the series by far. And so because of that, they can't guard those guys around the basket in the various ways in which they get around the basket. So if you can't guard them, what do? You send help. You send a second guy to stunt down, or you drop from the weak side, or you send an extra person to the defensive boards to not leak out, to make sure that you can control a rebound. Well, all of that compresses bodies into the paint. And so this is on a fundamental level why teams have such a hard time beating us, is they have to put all of this extra attention into the paint, and they will have middling results in stopping us because AD can still go over the top of you with skill, right? He can hit those little mm-hmm. floaters, that mid-range jumper. So just because you send all this attention into the paint doesn't mean you're going to win that possession. And by sending all that attention into the paint, what's happening behind the three-point line? So that's why I think those looks are sustainable.
The other thing to keep in mind here, I think, in regards to creating those shots and the difference between the Lakers and, say, Boston and even Milwaukee, is that the guys that are throwing the most dangerous passes here are bigger than most of those guys. Like Giannis, obviously, is bigger or is as long or whatever, but he's not as good at LeBron at those skip passes and stuff and the reads that lead to them. And why I bring this up is because, like, you saw it last night in the game, or you know, where AD is doubled in the post and he can just stand up straight and throw an overhead pass over the top of all of Miami. And not only does that make that pass a lot easier, but you can put a lot of pace on passes that you throw over your head. You know, it's part of why LeBron's skip passes are so deadly. He's so on point with that version of a pass, and he can put so much pace on it that it provides an extra half second to whatever shooter is on the other end of the pass. You know, Rondo can't necessarily do the same things, but he's been operating as such for the entirety of his career. And the Lakers rely more heavily on, all right, AD, LeBron, collapse the defense, find the right pass to make here. And then what that allows too, so even if that AD or LeBron overhead pass isn't what's creating the advantage, isn't what's, you know, taking advantage of the double team, it gives the whoever is on the other end of that pass a clear path to whatever shooter is two passes away. And that is now also a comfortable pass. So, like, all of this
very comes well said.
To,
yeah.
All of this comes to, like, it's the same kind of thing we talked about with Houston. Houston can't just get bigger overnight. That isn't something that's allowed. Mm-hmm. Like, Simmons, again, was talking about, well, they could just play Kelly Olynyk. He looked fine in garbage time. I was like, it's Bill, it's garbage time. Do you know what garbage time is? It's like garbage players look great in garbage time. And then, you know, the other player that has been thrown out there just to add some size here is Myers Leonard, who AD is saying, please do put him in the game. See how that goes. You know, just like the problem with the way that Miami is kind of built and the predicament that the Lakers put a lot of these teams in is you can get bigger, but you're going to sacrifice a huge chunk of your identity in doing so. Whereas the Lakers, they can get smaller, but they're still going to be bigger. And that's what all these teams run up against when you're trying to force the Lakers into any kind of an adjustment here. There just isn't much that you can do to force the Lakers to not be bigger than you. And in this case, there isn't much that Miami can do to match up with the Lakers' size and physicality.
There you go.
All right. So really quick before we get out of here and we throw to the brief segment I'm going to have with Jen, do you still feel pretty confident in the Lakers in five? Or did you see enough in yesterday's game where you say like this could actually be a sweep?
The only reason I think it goes five is because Miami will always compete. Mm-hmm. And us having a game like we did against Denver in game three, mm-hmm. I think is always possible. That said, Denver was more equipped to handle us than Miami was. And that was still just a five game series because of Jokic and strength. Miami is hurt. Bam and Dragic are doubtful. Mm-hmm. I think going down 2-0, I think it will be difficult for Miami to muster the belief that they could win the series. Now, if they go down 0-2 after tomorrow, and that will be, it's going to be an uphill battle for them, right, with their guys out. I wouldn't be surprised at all if we started out slow and, mm-hmm. you know, are trailing at some point in the first quarter. I'll still give Miami that respect of a five-game series where we don't quite bring our best one night, and they always do, so they pick one up. But I don't see it getting beyond that, and I do think a sweep is I don't think it's an unreasonable possibility.
Yep, I'm right there with you. The more that I watched that game, especially the second time, the more I felt like this is just a different class of team.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
So to put this differently, because I feel like if Milwaukee or the Clippers, like if the Clippers didn't hate each other, they'd be in the class of what the Lakers are capable of doing right now. If Milwaukee threw another pitch, they would be in the class of what the Lakers are doing right now. But teams that aren't Milwaukee and that aren't the Clippers don't have the personnel to be as elite as the Lakers mm-hmm. are playing mm-hmm. right now. That's just the Lakers have a different ceiling that they have reached, by the way.
It's almost like there are two tiers at least between the Lakers and those teams. Because I agree that those teams kind of have ceiling that could be similar, but had perhaps some fatal flaws mm-hmm. in what they do. And then after that, yeah, it becomes personnel with other teams. Yep. That's a good point.
All right. So let's go ahead and throw it to the conversation we're going to have with Jen here in a second. And then we will talk to you guys tomorrow after the game. Or no, maybe after the game. We'll see how the game goes. Today's show is also brought to you in part by DoorDash. It's a huge sports weekend coming up. Obviously, the Lakers have a couple finals games. The Dodgers are in the playoffs. You have any number of teams that you might be rooting for in baseball. We're still in this wild first round of the playoffs. Even if they're wrapping up, we're heading into the second round. And that's going to be just as crazy as it's a five-game series. All these games are going to be super stressful. And the best way that I find of dealing with this more safely than, adult beverages is just to eat. and DoorDash has been a just phenomenal way to get food safely. They have partnerships with any number of restaurants you could possibly be looking for. And the drivers are always great. They're very communicative. It's just the best way to get food delivered to your house. So head on over or download the DoorDash app and then enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA and you can get $5 off with zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more. That's $5 off your first order. You'll also pay no delivery fees, but only if you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA. Don't forget, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. All right, I'm joined now by Dr. Jennifer Irwin. Almost went Bierstedt, or not Bierstedt anymore. We are here to discuss three injuries on Miami's side here. Mm-hmm. The first one, I think, is the straightest forward one with Jimmy Butler turning his ankle. He says that if he's healthy, he's going to play, and if he plays, he expects to win. That's some typical Jimmy Butler stuff. Fun story about Jimmy Butler. Mm-hmm. This is a really good one. Ready? Mm-hmm. So when he was still in Chicago, he removed the rear view mirrors from his car because he said he never wanted to look back.
So he ignored all traffic safety rules.
Committed a felony.
Yeah. just to prove a point only to himself.
Yeah. Committed a felony to sound cool.
It sounds committed.
So he turns his ankle, and you and I were watching at the same time when that happened. And I thought it was a pretty bad one just because he was putting weight on it and trying to explode upwards from it, right? And he was trying to stop himself. There was a lot of force coming down on that ankle. He was able to continue, but he was kind of visibly hobbling the rest of the series. The next day after something like that is super painful.
Mm-hmm.
But is that the kind of thing that with treatment, based on what you were able to see, based on the fact he was able to walk and still kind of jog around, do you think that's something that he'll be able to play with for the rest of the series?
I think it works in his favor to keep it mobile after he injures his ankle. What we have found is that, and again, depending on the severity of the sprain, but if you're able to walk on it, walk on it. If you're able to move on it, move on it.
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing you can do is to stop moving completely because all of the tissues are going to tighten up on you and it's going to make it harder to recover. So what's actually working in his favor is that he stayed mobile after the injury. And the fact that he, and correct me if I'm wrong, he completed the game?
Well, it was a blowout, so eventually he came back out. But he went back out there and played after he hurt his ankle.
Right, so that gives a better prognosis. I wouldn't be surprised if he finished the series. Yeah. He's going to be sore after every game, so it's important that he does the necessary post-game treatments to make sure that he can continue playing. But I don't think it's going to be something that's going to keep him out for any part of the series.
Yeah, he's a tough SOB too. So a tough SOB with no rearview mirrors. the next guy on the list here, and this is probably the one that Heat fans are most concerned about, that this one would probably change the series the most just because of the potential length of it. But Goran Dragic reportedly tore his fascia in his foot. I deal with plantar fasciitis. It's not particularly comfortable.
Right.
We saw, I mean, this might have just been because of the way he was turning anyway, but after he planted that left foot and then put the next foot down, we saw that it immediately, he went straight to the outside of the foot, which that's something, as somebody who has dealt with that enough, I know that step. I know.
Right.
Now, I think it was too soon after the fact, and apparently he kept playing. Which was kind of weird. And then, you know, they showed him during a timeout and he has his hands on his head and he knows that this seems pretty serious. But let's just go with your average tear of the fascia. What's not just in terms of whether or not he can play, but also in terms of like, what movements is he going to find the most difficult out there? Is it a lateral movement thing, or is it a sprinting movement thing? Is it a jumping thing? Is it just everything?
Well, so first we have to look at, because I don't think a lot of people understand what the plantar fascia actually is. So the plantar fascia is a ligament, and it kind of looks like a web that goes along the bottom of your foot, and it acts as a shock absorber and kind of acts as a sling, like a support structure for your foot.
Mm-hmm.
So in actuality,
mine looks more like a hammock at this point.
Probably. So if you think about it, if this ligament acts as a shock absorber, then almost any movement is going to be uncomfortable for somebody who deals with plantar fasciitis.
Mm-hmm.
However, the most painful mobility that's going to be for the plantar fascia is going from heel to toe when you're walking or when you're running. That straight sagittal forward and back motion is going to be the most painful for the plantar fascia. What were the other questions that you had
about
like, it?
So if that's the most painful movement on it, is that, so, I mean, you might get it in jogging, right?
Yeah.
You'll feel that somewhat in jogging. Mm-hmm. Sprinting, I guess you wouldn't feel it as much because you're going straight to your toe on those plants.
Usually the way that people develop plantar fasciitis is it's usually a repetitive injury.
Mm.
It's usually a stress injury.
Mm.
Very rarely.
He's been playing out of his mind, so you might be pushing it.
Right. Very rarely do you actually see somebody injuring their plantar fascia like an ankle sprain. Right? You usually don't see somebody coming up lame after they do a weird jump, a weird hop, and then it's a plantar fascial strain. It's likely that he might have been dealing with this for a while and has just been playing through the pain.
And then it gave way.
And then it finally broke him, right? A lot of times the plantar fascia can get overstressed if you have really tight calf muscles, if you have any kind of Achilles, either tightness or straining. And that's very, very common in basketball players because it's a jumping sport. So it's possible that he's been dealing with calf tightness, Achilles issues over time, and with as much as he's been pushing himself, his plantar fascia has just become a victim.
That's tough. Like, again, I've dealt with it. A lot of people out there have dealt with plantar fasciitis. I guess my other question, this last thing on that one, the fact that they call it a tear right now, the fact that they're saying, you know, a torn plantar fascia, the fact that they're calling it a torn fascia, would tell me that it's more than your typical strain, right? Because like most strains or sprains are some form of a tear of a ligament, right? Just the amount of tearing that actually occurs.
So remember, plantar fascia is a ligament. It's just a very thinly wide-stretched ligament. So regardless of the strain that you put on it, it's going to be labeled as a tear.
Yeah.
Plantar fascia, or I'm sorry, plantar fasciitis is a... Basically, it's a combination of a bunch of little micro tears in that ligament.
So
no matter what, it's a tear.
Okay. But the fact that they're labeling it a tear, right? Would that maybe imply that all of those micro tears all kind of came together and made a bigger tear?
I think if it made a big tear, he'd be in surgery.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
All right. Last one on here, Bam Adebayo. Injures his shoulder on a play that he was creating the contact on. That was kind of what I found kind of interesting. That usually doesn't speak to a bunch of stability in that area if the contact that you are causing. Now, the contact that he's causing was on Dwight Howard, who's built like a goddamn brick wall.
Right.
So I could see why, you know, that's not your average kind of bump he into a
pushed
shot.
Pushed off a Coke machine.
Right, yeah. So... you've seen, I'm guessing you've seen the injury, you've read up on what he's supposedly dealing with. Both he and Dragic, by the way, are considered doubtful for tomorrow night's or tonight's game by the time you guys are listening to this. And, you know, it's his left shoulder, non-shooting, but the fact that he's already considered doubtful and given the way that he injured it makes me feel like it might be worse than... maybe you would originally think having seen it when you first saw it.
Yeah, so I was doing a little bit of reading on it before we started recording, and it was initially labeled as a shoulder injury, but the last that I read up on it is that it's now a neck injury. So just reading that alone and looking at the mechanism of injury, it looks like he pulled or strained his upper trap muscle. That's the muscle that connects the shoulder, shoulder girdle to the neck. And if you look at it, what happens is he kind of dips down a little bit. He pushes his left shoulder into Howard's chest and then pushes off of it. So it makes sense that that impact actually caused that muscle to strain. Now, when they say shoulder injury in a basketball player, your mind usually automatically goes to the rotator cuff. You would rather have an upper trapezius strain than you would a rotator cuff injury. So I think that that gives him a better prognosis. However, if anybody's ever pulled their upper trap before, that neck muscle, it can take a while to heal. We use those muscles a lot, and it's actually one of the more important muscles that you use in shooting a basketball because it helps to lift the entire shoulder girdle when you go to pull the ball up and shoot. So it's not something that he's going to get over immediately. I wouldn't be surprised if he sat next game out, but the game after that, I wouldn't be surprised if he came back. Again, though, that's all depending on how severe the strain is. But given the fact that it's possibly an upper trap strain versus a rotator cuff injury, he has a better prognosis.
Gotcha. All right, so just to sum all this up, we think Butler, he said he's going to play, so no need in talking about prognosis there.
Yeah.
But for a torn plantar fascia, general prognosis there is 4 to 6 weeks, a couple months.
It's hard to say that when you're in the middle of a championship series. he's probably going to push through it.
Because one of the things that they were talking about with Drogic especially was they would just inject him with some cortisone.
Right.
And hope that that numbs it enough that he's able to go on it.
Right.
Would that be enough, do you think? Or is that pain going to be pretty brutal?
Well, he's going to be dealing with it after every game, for sure. But the cortisone injections are going to help because those are anti-inflammatory injections. He's going to be taped up like crazy. There's some really good tape techniques that you can do for plantar fascia. Plantar fasciitis that can help give the foot a little bit more support. So he's probably going to get a combination of possibly the injection. He's going to be getting therapy for sure. And hopefully they'll be taping up his foot to give it a little bit more support so that he's not straining the fascia as much throughout the game.
And then the shoulder injury, it's pretty ambiguous. Like, we don't really know much about it. They're just like, shoulder strain. It could be anything. He's already considered doubtful, but for like your typical shoulder strain, is that the kind of thing that he might be able to play through, seeing as it's his left shoulder?
Yeah, especially since it's not his shooting shoulder. And again, the fact that it's likely his upper trap and not his rotator cuff, just given what we've read as far as it being now considered a neck injury, that gives him, again, a better prognosis. If he does sit out this coming game, he'll probably be back the next game. He's just going to get a lot of physical therapy. They're going to do a lot of soft tissue work or massage. And that should help with him playing with a little less pain.
I feel like with pro athletes, they should, like, I know it's technically still soft tissue, but their soft tissue is probably harder than my hard tissue.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's a different definition for sure.
All right. That's going to do it then for this conversation with Dr. Jen. That is going to do it for this episode of Locked On Lakers. Depending on how the game goes, depending on what we see from there, Pete and I are going back and forth on whether or not we are going to record tomorrow night after the game. So we'll keep you posted on that. It is the NBA Finals. This doesn't happen all the time. So this might be the kind of thing that we make an exception for. But we'll let you know in plenty of time. And either way, you'll see the episode in your feed so long as you're subscribed. So make sure you guys are subscribed. Leave those iTunes questions in the form of a 5-star review. And I'll be able to get to those Sunday, potentially after the game. No, we'll probably do that on Monday, seeing as the Lakers play Sunday. So have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Stay safe out there. And we'll talk to you on Monday.